Addiction devastates millions of Americans, and shaking off its grip is extremely hard. Earlier this year, Side Effects Public Media asked people in recovery to share their stories at a live event in Indianapolis. We'll share them in a series called Sober, Stories of Recovery and Hope. This story is from a paramedic who asked that we identify him only as James.
394 husbands, wives, and kids died at any given 48-hour period in 2017 from opiate overdose alone. That doesn't include any alcohol or other intoxicants. 394 also is strikingly close to what a 747 jumbo jet holds. Could you imagine a jumbo jet crashing every other day in our country right now and us not being more active in treating something that has to do with what's causing that crash? Fortunately for me, I was able to parachute to safety off of one of those planes, and today I'm going to share a little bit about my story. It has to do with some tragedy, triumph, and recovery, and finding a new way of life when I thought I was hopeless. I grew up in a upper middle class suburb around a major metropolitan area. Went to private schools, private tutors, went to college, paid for by my parents, had a great life growing up. And I came home from college one day to visit a cousin who was long-term house-sitting my grandparents' house that had gone to a retirement home about 6 or 8 months prior. And as we rummaged through the cupboard for food, innocently enough in the kitchen, I remember finding a gallon baggie. And this gallon bag had a few pill bottles in the bottom of it. And we got out one of the pill bottles and read very strikingly on it. It said Oxycontin. There were 20 pink pills in the bottom of that bottle that we took out. And I remember somehow I possessed the knowledge that if you took the coating off and basically took it via your nose, that it would get you high. And little did I know that that choice would forever change the trajectory of my life, essentially. At that point, I was an AB student in a college. I was a licensed scuba diver at 14, a licensed pilot at 17, a skydiver, a snow skier, a water skier. I mean, we all know how this narrative goes. A young, healthy, normal person goes off to college, finds drugs, and essentially starts to ruin their life. Now, it wasn't as fast as I anticipated. There was a lot of good times initially, but just like the grading curve at the university or at college, I rode the wave up and then sharply fell down at the other side. I remember that first day feeling the rush of the opioid. I mean, essentially it was like a dopamine dump. I thought I'd won $10 million. My very nervous, calm, and reserved personality melted away. I was immediately charismatic. I was able to do and say whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and not have to think about how other people were perceiving me. At this time, I essentially was still doing well in school, and eventually, as time progressed, I found that I was substituting drugs and alcohol for basically my academic life. I went from being that AB student and actually initially being one semester 4.0 in college, might be by accident, but it did happen, to essentially I left my college ashamed and broken. I could not finish the last course. I had 3 credits, a managerial accounting class that I could not pass to get my bachelor's of science. I left there and I ended up taking a job in aviation. As a pilot at the time, I found myself in Kuwait in 2006, and it was a dry country. I did not know that when I accepted the position, and my boss says, "It's a dry country." I was like, "Yeah, I know it's the desert," and he goes, "No, it's dry, like booze dry," and you know, I laugh today, but at the time, my stomach sank. I drank every day. I would have used opiates every day if I were able to find them, but I was not, thankfully, at that time. Long story short, I end up in a Middle East area where public executions are not uncommon. And I would routinely sneak alcohol and opiates in the belly of the plane to where I'm at, because I didn't like dealing with the fear of living behind a 15-foot IED wall. I didn't like having to be x-rayed going into and out of my hotel room. I didn't like watching all the coffins of the troops that were killed. And instead of reaching out and talking to a mental health provider, I chose drugs and alcohol. I thankfully was only caught violating a visa infraction. I ended up in the back room of the Kuwaiti airport being grilled for multiple hours about why my visa had been expired for 6 months. And essentially that was so that I could continue to feed my drug and alcohol addiction at that time. I ended up coming back to the States and, you know, essentially rode that wave down. And, you know, I didn't find a bottom because I was arrested. I didn't find a bottom because I lost a bunch of stuff. I found a bottom because I hated who I became. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. I could no longer have any self-respect or dignity. And I thought that I was going to die if I kept doing what I was doing, which motivated me to try to find another way. Essentially, the disease of addiction, if you drank and drug like I did, you chase everyone away unless they drank and drug like you do. And so when I got back to the States, I had one friend. It was my younger brother. And we drank and drugged together. And essentially, we chased everyone else out of our lives because we didn't want them to be in the way of what we did. It's a lonely, hellish way to exist, but that's how we existed. At some point, our family stepped in and asked me and all of us to intervene, a younger brother, and I told the interventionist, you know, I'm his biggest using buddy. I am elbows deep in a drug and alcohol addiction, and I cannot find my way out. And so we had this intervention. The plan was for me to agree to go and him to follow suit. And to go on to treatment, to do a detox and that type of thing. He decided to go it alone. August 20th of 2008, I jumped in the car with that interventionalist and went down to a treatment center. 7 days of hellish detox, 30 days inpatient, 9 months in a halfway house, and a lot of 12-step meetings. I found hope and I found a way out. Fast forward to a period of time, I'm probably 2 years sober at this point. Believe it or not, I was able to finish that Bachelor's of Science in my first try when I was sober, and became an EMT, and then a paramedic, and then eventually a firefighter paramedic, and essentially made a career Narcanning and helping those that drank and drug like I used to drink and drug. And I would help with harm reduction knowledge and help introduce them to 12-step meetings or to recovery or to anything I could do to help keep that addict or alcoholic alive for another day. One day I was on a shift about 15 minutes from my younger brother, and he unfortunately succumbed to this disease and didn't make it. He never got the chance to get the Narcan shot that I gave as a profession, and I carried that for a long time. That is the reality of this disease: is some of us are chosen by chance, and some of us are not. And you know, there's a lot of days that I think, man, I wish I could have been there to give him a shot. And then, it is what it is. I remember stumbling into my home group. At this point, I was 3.5 years sober, and I just sat down bawling. And I remember saying, you know, it got them. And they had heard me talk about them for many years, and they knew what I meant. EMS was never really the same for me after that. I struggled on overdose runs. I struggled on any young person that was critically injured or ill. At that time, I didn't know anything about post-traumatic stress disorder regarding my time in the Middle East or being a first responder. I remember thinking to myself, why am I so paranoid? Why am I so hypervigilant? Why do I have these nightmares? Why do I see these dead people from the ceiling when the rafters that I walk into? And I didn't understand any of that. Eventually, closing in on 5 years sober, I had cut back on my meetings I was going to. I cut back on working with other alcoholics and addicts, and I cut back on service work. And then it happened. I had essentially a head full of lies about I wasn't that bad. I had a botched surgery, and I had a stomach full of pain medicine. And I ended up right back creating that hell on earth that I had clawed my way out of with the help of lots of fellow alcoholics and addicts. I essentially ended up back in treatment, another detox, a locked psych ward, a 30 days inpatient, and then some supportive living initially afterward, and lots of service work, and have been able to climb my way back out with all the help of those that I surround myself with. Today, you know, I live my life 24 hours at a time. I greatly accept and seek out a Vivitrol shot to help block the effects, the euphoric effects of opioids today. I try to spread harm reduction knowledge, and as a smart friend of mine that I know mentioned, constant low intensity work for a lifelong disease. And that's where I try to stay plugged in to the recovery community. Today I have an awesome family, an awesome career, and an awesome life. 99% of the people I interact with in the medical community today have no idea that I suffer from opioid use disorder. And essentially, you know, I'm a product of a system of treatment and 12-step meetings and volunteering and guys that selflessly volunteered their time to me when I needed help. So it affects everyone from a millionaire under a bridge to a millionaire CEO to someone that's living underneath a bridge. You know, I am very grateful that I'm on the lifeboat and was able to parachute off of that plane, because many number of people today and even in our city will not make it. So I'm grateful to be sober. That's all I got. Thank you.
This story was produced by Matt Pelser. You can find the full series at sideeffectspublicmedia.org. Monday night at 9, tune in to WFYI for an hour-long special on these stories.